Aloha and welcome to the Hawaii Family Forum Triple F Podcast. Triple F stands for Faith, Family, and Freedom. Hawaii Family Forum has worked alongside the faith-based community in Hawaii since 1998. Join us today as we continue to work toward a Hawaii where God is honored, religious freedom flourishes, families thrive, and life is cherished. Aloha, everybody. This is Eva Andrade. I am the president of Hawaii Family Forum. And as you all are aware, we're starting to do these little podcasts on issues that are happening at the state capitol, and bills are flying and hearings are flying fast and furious. And there's a couple of really important issues that we want to make you aware of. And we're going to be talking to a wonderful duo of individuals who are out in the community working on an issue that is a really important issue, and it's a positive issue, and we want to put that into your hands. So we're speaking today with first Esther McDaniel, who many of you have remembered from our podcast on kids in the foster care system. Welcome back, Esther.
Aloha. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's so good to have you again, Esther. I just love you and I love your work, and we could spend a whole day on all the wonderful things you do in the community. Okay, and we also have from Waimea, from Kamuela, Hawaii, we have Joe O'Connell. And he is not only an individual who spent time in foster care as a youth, but he's also someone who is working very hard today on the Big Island on helping families. Welcome, Joe.
Thank you for having me, Eva. I appreciate it.
Hey, no problem. So what I'll do now is we'll start with you, Joe, since people know a little bit about Esther already. We'll start with you. Why don't you tell everybody a little bit more about yourself and why you're involved on this particular issue that we're going to be talking about?
Well, I grew up on Hawaii Island. At the age of 8, I got involved with the foster care system, myself and my siblings. And the foster care system stayed in our lives until I aged out at the age of 18. And I'm forever grateful to the work that social workers do, because I truly feel that I'm able to do what I do today because of the intervention of child welfare services. So with that kind of background, I graduated college with a bachelor's in business and economics, and I actually ended up going back into work in the child welfare field. So I work for a service provider that works very closely with social workers, the department, child welfare services, and I also am a foster parent.
Ooh, so you've gone the gamut. You've been there, done that, and you're still doing it.
Yes, thank you.
Well, that means your heart's in the right place, and we're just grateful that not only are you happy with the journey that you made, and we're not even going to talk about problems because there's always problems in everything, but that you're still putting your heart in there and out there for the kids that are in the foster care system. So thank you so much for saying yes to that.
Thank you. It's my pleasure to be able to give back.
Well, and of course, that just ties in so nicely with Esther. Esther, you've been doing this for a long time, too. You want to remind people who you are?
Yes. So I am a Hanai parent. I Hanai'd my nephew back in 1995, right at the time that I was going to be giving birth to my son. So I had not parented before, but my sister asked me for help with her son. So we did that, and she sent him from California to Hawaii. And then in 2003 was the first time I became licensed as a licensed resource caregiver. I think back then they called us foster parents, which that's still the common, you know, also known as foster parents. So since 2003, our home has been licensed in various capacities, general license, Project First Care, child specific. These are different types of licenses or ways that you can be licensed through foster care. And then I also work for a ministry called Harvest Family Life Ministries, which provides foster, Hanai, adoptive families with support. And of course, you know, our focus is really truly caring for children who are most vulnerable in foster care.
So that means that both of you then are very experienced and knowledgeable about the child welfare services here in the state of Hawaii.
Yes, and yeah. Learning every day.
Well, that's exactly what we're going to talk about today, because the two bills that we're talking about, they're not quite companion bills, but they're very, very similar. The first one is HB 2277, and this bill was introduced by Representatives Todd, Gates, Holt, Kobayashi, Mizuno, Nakamura, Nakashima, Quinlan, and San Buenaventura. The reason I say the names is because I want people to also be mindful that legislators do good things. And so as you're listening to this, dear listener, please know that, you know, it's not always about calling the legislature and yelling at them about a bad bill. We want to stand with them when they do good work. The Senate version is Senate Bill 2276, and that one was introduced by Senator Josh Green, Ruderman, Chang, Gabbard, and Wakai, and we really thank them for putting this bill out. And what the bills basically do, and Joe, I want you to jump in because this is your kuleana, this is what you do, but basically it's going to make some kind of appropriation for DHS to establish a pilot program in East Hawaii. You want to tell us a little bit more about that and why we need it? I mean, what's going on in the Big Island over there that they need some money to do a pilot project?
Okay, thank you. There, across the state, the child welfare system is truly overburdened. The Child Welfare League of America recommends caseloads of 12 to 15 children in order to be able to do an adequate job. Today, social workers, I know specifically in East Hawaii, have 45 to 55 children when fully staffed. Recently, we had one just leave and another one on long-term medical leave. So that means everyone's caseload is even going to go above that. So that's way above the recommended caseload. And we had one too many tragedies last year in East Hawaii. So that kind of really sparked it. Additionally, we're still suffering from the cuts that were made during the recession around 2008, 2009. In East Hawaii specifically, we used to have 56 positions to staff the east side of the island. That's from section administrator to secretaries to supervisors. Today, we have 37 positions. That's a 34% decrease from 10 years ago. And also, they eliminated one of our regional offices as well. We used to have two offices to serve East Hawaii. Now we have one office. And when I say East Hawaii, I don't just mean Hilo. I mean Kau, Puna, North Hilo, South Hilo, and all of Hamakua. That's a land area the size of all the other islands combined. So it's a massive area. And if you were to leave the Hilo office and to go to Ocean View, it's a two-hour drive each way. So you're talking a four-hour round trip. So it's just not possible what these social workers are dealing with. What this bill is it's a pilot project that would cap the number of kids being supervised by a social worker to 20 kids. So it would to do this, we would have to increase their staffing. The other thing it does is it gives each social worker their own assistant. So they're able to truly focus on the kids and not have to worry about all the paperwork that can really bog them down. We want to make sure that the social worker sees the kid every single month. There's way too many reports of kids going 6 months without being seen by a social worker. And that's just not healthy. And that's how tragedies occur. So that's kind of what this bill is about.
You know, walk us through, you know, for the people that, you know, go along their lives, you know, and they don't think about things and they wake up in the morning and they have their coffee and they take care of their kids and they go through life and they go to bed at night. They don't think about what happens in these places where these kids are, you know, having problems and they need help. Walk us through, what does it look like in the day of a caseworker right now?
So all child welfare cases start off with a call to the intake line. The intake worker will ask questions and determine whether or not to dispatch an investigation. If they dispatch it, it'll get signed to a social worker and the social worker will investigate. Depending on the situation, for example, if it was the hospital and they tested the baby and the baby has meth in its system, then it's going to need high care. So the social worker will go to the hospital, will then find foster parents that are trained in medically fragile infants, and will then develop a service plan for the parents to get them the help that they need with the hope that baby will be able to return. And in the meantime, they need to make sure that the foster parent has all the resources, training, and education needed to take care of that infant. If it's a teenager, maybe they came forward to their counselor at school about some abuse that's happening at home. So the social worker might then show up to the school. They'll can perform a C, what they call a CJC interview, and that's with detectives to see if a criminal investigation needs to be opened. And then the social worker will be working with investigators to take care of the criminal case as well as making sure that the youth is placed in a good foster home where they can be safe, trying to keep them in the same school district if they have multiple siblings, trying to keep them in one home, but oftentimes they end up in several homes. So ideally they're coordinating sibling visits for these for the siblings as well, so they can maintain these connections. And then also working with the family to see if there's an appropriate family relative who can become the foster parent so that they can stay connected to family if appropriate, and if they can find an appropriate relative. So there's a lot that goes on just for every single kid. And to have 55 kids to one worker is you can just imagine what work doesn't get done.
What are you finding? The bill has both the Senate bill and the House bill. They've passed through their first committees already, and there really wasn't any opposition. So you're finding that this is what people want?
Yeah, it's been really, really encouraging. Every senator that we've talked to, every state representative that we talked to, they didn't know it was this bad. They didn't know that the caseloads were that bad. They didn't know that there's been a decrease in staffing from 10 years ago and a decrease in regional offices and an increase in the demand of workload. So all of them, once they hear about what's going on and we educate them and we spread the word and we kind of shed light to this issue, so far each and every one of them has become very enthusiastic. One of the things they ask is, this is an East Hawaii pilot project bill. So this is kind of like our foot in the door. The reason it's an East Hawaii pilot project bill is because every other section in the state, every other child welfare services section, has open positions for both assistants and social workers that they haven't been able to fill for years and years and years. So if we gave everybody an extra 20 positions, it wouldn't make a difference for anybody anyways, except for East Hawaii. For East Hawaii, most likely due to the economic situation, there's a lot of people, they're able to survive off of a social worker's wage. They're able to consistently staff all of their positions. When a position goes vacant, they put it up, several people apply, and they hire the most qualified person. So the long-term vision for this bill is that it be implemented statewide. But the first step is to prove that when social workers have the correct resources to do their job, that the outcomes improve. We see higher reunification rates. We see children that are more supported. We see children getting visited every month. We see the court not sanctioning the department for not doing their job. We'll see a decrease in tragedies. So the first step is to just prove that when social workers are given the correct resources, outcomes improve. And then the next step will be, how can we implement this and help out statewide?
You know, this is so important because already at the state capitol, there's another bill that we find problematic that talks about a couple of local cases that everyone in Hawaii is familiar with. One is Peter Boy Kema. You want to talk a little bit about that, Esther? I mean, there is a move in the legislature to kind of go after homeschoolers, but that bill makes reference to the fact that some of these social workers are overworked. Do you see a correlation?
Yeah, and you know, listening to Joe describe, just listening to some of what he said about the day in the life of a social worker, that doesn't even include like going to court and court reports and all of that. And for the other bill that you're referring to, when they're talking about trying to regulate more or monitor more parents who want to homeschool, it's very interesting because I was a former homeschooler, you know, but I'm also a licensed resource caregiver. So I came at it more from the position of being, wait a second, we have a child welfare system and many of the workers do work really hard. But granted, you know, with caseload and just all these responsibilities that one worker has, how can we be then diverting, I guess, if I want to can use that word, diverting resources to create some kind of new procedure or policy or regulation for a specific group in the population when we still need to finish our work on, you know, improving and refining our existing child welfare system. So that was kind of more the take that I was looking at it was, we have this good piece of legislation that is a step. It's not going to solve everything, but it is a step in the right direction of at least minimizing the number of children that are on a social worker's caseload versus trying to address homeschoolers. And I heard some statements like invisible children, I guess using homeschooling as a reason or a way to hide children that they might be abusing. But very interestingly, I was reading Within Our Reach, which is the final 2016 report from the commission who was given the task to basically eliminate child abuse and neglect fatalities. It's a very long report, like I think it's like 150 pages, but I read through the majority of it. And they also have some recommendations, obviously a strategy that to begin addressing and eliminating, we're talking about fatalities due to child abuse and neglect. And one of the points in there is that they make this is, I'm just quoting from the report, CPS professionals have exceedingly difficult jobs and provide a critical public safety service. They are often overworked and highly stressed. The commission heard from CPS workers and supervisors about high caseloads, frequent turnover, and not enough time to adequately engage families. Shortages of workers, funds, and training may mean that inexperienced workers are tasked with making life or death decisions with insufficient preparation or support. That statement right there alone, this is a commission of former child welfare directors, other child welfare advocates, and experts in the field who studied this issue for 2 years across the United States. And this is one of the statements that they make out of that report, lending itself to say that, yes, we need to have a cap on how many children each worker is serving. I mean, it seems so common sense, but, and also that there was nothing that I found in the report that talked about monitoring homeschoolers more, or, you know, that in that realm of something to do with homeschool legislation or approval of homeschoolers.
You know, we applaud the legislature for at least trying to stop abuse and neglect that could be happening in these hidden homes. And that's kind of what they were talking about in the homeschooler bill. But on these two good bills that you guys are tracking, you know, basically they're just asking to do a pilot program, and then they want to add additional case managers, rights, and support staff. It seems, and I think it says they want to add 8 full-time equivalent case managers and 15 full-time equivalent support staff members. Is that what the bills are saying?
Right. So for East Hawaii, all it would take is 8 more case managers, 15 more assistants, and we would have no more than 20 kids per worker, and each worker would have their own kids, each worker would have their own assistant. So this isn't huge, you know what I mean? We're not miles and miles and miles away from getting the caseloads to a reasonable number. Right now we have 16 social workers to serve all of East Hawaii.
That's insane.
And all it would
That's insane.
Yeah, and that's absolutely, yeah, it's not possible. And they don't, and this is with, and each of those workers has to share an assistant. So that means the time that they could be spending visiting these kids, they're having to do stuff like reimburse foster parents for clothing, process payments, work on applications for summer programs, you know, those types of tasks that assistants do so well and support the social worker in, that they don't even have that support. So it's really crazy. And it doesn't take billions of dollars to solve. This would take 23 positions to solve it in East Hawaii. And then we could start, you know, and then we'll work with the department there. And they've already committed to this. All the social workers there are so supportive of this. You tell them, oh, we're working on getting caseloads down to 20. Their eyes come big and they say, oh, imagine what we could do with with a caseload of that, that's so, you know, they get really encouraged and they're really inspired, and they feel the support and they appreciate the support because they've been forgotten about for so long, you know.
Well, people forget that people go into social work because they want to help people. I mean, that's the whole reason they want to do what they do. But if they're overworked, then it becomes difficult for them. And I think, Esther, you mentioned that when you were reading the report, that there's a high turnover. Well, of course there's a high turnover. They're overworked. They're tired. They wanted to get into this to help people. And if they've got 50 folders on their desk, because I think what I saw in there is it could be 50 kids right now that they're dealing with, there is absolutely no way that they can give the proper focus to the kids that are the faces behind the folders that are on their desk. So this seems to me like it's very focused. It's asking for a very specific thing. But even if this passes, Joe, it's not over, is it? I mean, there, of course, there's more things that you would like to see happen once this ball gets rolling, if it gets passed. What's the next step?
Correct. So this is a 5-year pilot project to really prove to the legislature that these staffings do make a difference. The lawsuits against the state go down, the care of the children increases. So it'll be to make those positions permanent would be the next step, and then to see how we can implement this across the state so that all child welfare sections across the state of Hawaii are adequately staffed.
I want to get some numbers out there. And Esther, I know you and I had talked about this before. What is the number of kids in the foster care system right now in the state of Hawaii?
I think most recently numbers that we were given directly from section administrator here on Oahu, I think at the ending part of 2018, I think it was like fall of last year, it was like as high as 2,800. And they used that number in a story that they did on Hawaii News Now. We kind of then said, well, you know, kids come in and out. And so then we kind of went to like 2,600, 2,500. So that's why I think, oh, I don't know what Joe might say. But those were anywhere between 2,600 and 2,800 were what we were given most recently from one of the section administrators on Oahu.
Yes, 2,500 statewide.
Okay,
approximately.
But these child welfare workers, though, they're not only dealing with kids in the foster care, right? I mean, are they dealing with if somebody senses neglect in a home where the parents are the biological parents, do they get involved in those system, those situations as well?
So if the if the intake worker, who is the one who answers the call, dispatches an investigation, the social worker shows up and will make an assessment. So they'll say, hey, listen, there's some issues in this family and we want to put services in to help and keep you in place. Removal of the child is done as the very, very last resort, only in cases of imminent harm. So these are very hard cases. And there's also another section called voluntary case management. And what they'll say is, hey, listen, we don't want to get involved with your family. Please work with voluntary case management, which is a private nonprofit that handles it. And those social, and they'll have their own social workers, and they can work with them in that case. And what they'll do is the voluntary case management will just submit a report to the department saying, hey, we recommend this family go to some parenting classes, and they've done it and we're closing the case, and then it can close out that way. So the social worker has a lot of options once they show up on site.
And it's such a good point that Joe brings up about voluntary case management. So again, it lends itself to saying, when we're talking about numbers and we say 2,500 children in foster care in the state of Hawaii, that means that that's their current status. What about children that are in voluntary case management or in other diversionary programs that maybe their status is not officially considered foster care and they're not within those numbers? Now you're talking about greater than 2,500. Right. And then when you start talking about, like you mentioned, intake, right? There's like an assessment or that first initial part, like, okay, will this go to low, medium, or high risk? High risk obviously starts lending itself towards, okay, that's going to move towards removal. Maybe lower will be family strengthening. Again, another nonprofit that's contracted with the state handles those cases. And then we have voluntary case management. But now when we just even take all of those numbers, if we take intake numbers, that's like thousands, you know, that phone call that then led to whether it's a full investigation or just even following up with the family, it's just a lot of, there's a lot of work in that system. And a lot of why we say that even ourselves in the community, parents, families coming alongside families, how much that we can be that preventive piece. By I don't want to just simplify this, but when I say loving my neighbor, caring about my neighbor, that truly can go a long way if we can help a family avoid full-on CPS investigation and actually strengthen their families by being that good neighbor. I think that's partially what the bill, of course, we're asking for funding and the pilot program, but we're also needing to look at that piece of what is my role in this, just as the individual citizen in our community. What, and that all of us, we have a role and all of us can participate in being there for that social worker, in being there for that child that's in foster care, in being in there for that parent or grandparent or auntie and uncle who might be fostering a relative. Each of us has such an important part to play and to offer.
You know, that's why I had asked the question about the numbers, because I think that people that aren't in this every day and don't think about it the way you two do because you do the work, a lot of times they just, oh, that's just a social worker. You know, they're just crazy, or all they want to do is take kids away from their parents and all that. But if we look at the bones of what we're talking about here, we're talking about an individual who is overworked and their responsibility level is off the chart. And each of those file folders on their desk represents a real life. And if they're overwhelmed and they're overworked, then they're not able to give the right kind of focus and attention to the child, which sometimes could end up with a child either falling through the cracks or a child not getting the services they really need, when we, the community, are there all the time, right? It's exactly what you're saying, Esther. It's our responsibility to stand alongside our neighbor and provide that support. These two bills are such a good way to start helping the caseworkers so that they can start making better choices. At least that's the way I look at this. And I think that we could probably do a 2-hour podcast on the workload of these guys and what they do and what their day looks like. And so I want listeners to really be mindful that this is not an attack by any means on the social workers who do this very important work. We want to help. We want to get alongside them. So we actually have been talking for half an hour, guys. Is there anything that we've missed, Joe, that you want to really hammer home with the community on this issue?
Well, thank you, Eva, for taking the time to talk about this topic. And I would just encourage everybody statewide to take the time to call your legislator if you have time to also track this bill and just support it in any way you can. And like you said earlier, Eva, even just supporting social workers and how Esther said, if you know anybody who's a foster parent, to support them as well, because it's a difficult, it's a difficult work, but it's important work. And the way we treat our most vulnerable youth is important, and they should be treated well. And so I just thank you guys for taking the time to talk about this, and the listeners taking their time to educate themselves on this matter.
And Esther, you got any last words?
Yes, maybe all of this talk about the bill or legislation, maybe that's intimidating. You don't want to write testimony or don't know how, or testifying in public is, you know, public speaking is scary for a lot of people. But reach out through Hawaii Family Forum and you can get in contact with me. And we can find out other ways that maybe you can serve our foster, adoptive, and Hanai community. We would welcome that. And I love doing that, helping people find their passion and their way of their using their gifts and their talents and their knowledge and their skills to bless our keiki.
Oh, absolutely. And if you're a social worker and you're listening to this, first of all, we just want to thank you for opening up your heart to these kids that need help, there's not too many people that raised their hand and said, I'll do it, and you did. So thank you for doing that. And for you, Esther, and for you, Joe, for your hard work in this, I know your passion is there. We want to get alongside you. So please keep us posted as this bill moves. And please make sure that you're connected with Hawaii Family Forum, because we will provide talking points on this issue if you want to get involved. There's not really a lot of opposition to the bill, but we want you guys to get alongside the effort and to support it. So thank you so much, Joe, and thank you, Esther, for your time. And we will have you back as this issue moves forward, because I'm sure that we're going to need more education in the community. I really appreciate both of you very, very much. Aloha, this is Eva Andrade, president of Hawaii Family Forum, and we are pleased that you were able to join us on this weekly Triple F podcast. We hope you'll join us next week. Take care and God bless.